This is Roland Berger.
Roland Berger.
Roland Berger.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Roland Berger People Insights podcast. Each of our episodes feature captivating stories from our colleagues as they share their personal journeys, consulting insights and lessons learned while living across borders and embracing diverse cultures and communities. This episode is all about Lisa and Victoria and their amazing adventures in Africa together with the Big Girls Foundation. My name is Ben and I'm Communications Manager at Roland Berger. Stay tuned and be inspired.
Lisa, what are you doing at Roland Berger?
I'm a principal in our industrials platform, which means that I mainly support our industrial clients, mostly from the packaging and processing industry, but also to automotive suppliers. And there I focus on growth strategies. So everything top line related, inorganic and anorganic growth, that's my passion.
Great. Why did you choose consulting as a profession?
I think in my early days of job search, it was the most versatile, steep learning curve profession I could imagine. And during some internships, it manifested. And then I was just looking for the right partner to start.
You're still doing consulting, so...
No, yeah, that's now 8 years ago. So I think probably the better question is why I'm still doing the job. The main reasons is that working on a daily basis with highly motivated people, thriving for excellence, supporting important causes is something that really gives back to me a lot. But also having colleagues that are really empathetic and fun to work with is making every challenge way more fun than I could imagine in the beginning.
Tell us more about the Big Girls Foundation.
Yeah, the Big Girls Foundation is an NGO founded now 4 years ago by colleagues and friends with the overarching goal to support young women and girls in Kenya so that they can live a self-determined life. And I think all of us know how important education is. And if we think of education, we probably think about our dream job, learning a new language. But education is way more basic in some areas of the world. So we operate at the bottom of the Kilimanjaro in Kenya, which is a patriarchic society. Most of the families live from livestock. And I think we know also that from the media, there have been severe droughts in the past decades, meaning that a lot of the livestock is unfortunately gone. And so that is kind of their bank, which also means that the financial means decrease significantly. And if you have in a patriarchic society, boys and girls, typically you only send the boys to school if there's not enough money for all children. And we want to change that because we believe that education, especially in a patriarchic society, is required because it doesn't only provide you maybe with your dream job. It provides you with knowing your basic rights, to be able to stand up for yourself. And it also helps you in terms of nutrition, hygiene. And as women are the integral part of society, not only in Kenya, it just have a really widespread effect.
Can you tell me a little bit more about how the Big Girls Foundation developed? So why did you choose that area? How did you came up with it?
We had quite quickly the understanding that we want to support mainly girls and in areas where it's most needed. So one precondition was that we have a local partner we want to work with, because who are we to judge who deserves education or not? So that was one of the main prerequisites. And we found a partner, the Big Life Foundation, which is quite established, and they are mainly into wildlife protection. And realized if we do wildlife protection, which means we have more wildlife and dangerous animals that might take away the livestock, we need to provide an alternative source of income through education. So they had a very small education branch, which was not the main focus strategy. So they had roughly 300 scholarships. And we could, so to say, use their infrastructure. They work with local education committees that have quite strict selection criteria in terms of who receives a scholarship. So you need to have good grades, be involved in your society, really have a high need background. And so we partnered with them, but made it a prerequisite for our scholarships that we only attribute them to girls. And that's where, so to say, the match then was made. And we did that all during COVID. So we've seen our partners, I think, the first time nearly a year after the founding and foundation of the NGO, which was, a lot of trust. It worked out. And I remember the first time we visited, we had initially only scholarships on our radar, but then soon realized when we were over there that there are basic needs like infrastructure from school desks, drinking water access, to toilets, hygiene standards. So we visited schools based on a priority survey, decided on infrastructure projects that we want to add. 1 year later, we were back and built 2 toilet evolution blocks, 1 drinking water well, and 300 school desks. And I think our partners were also a bit surprised that like 5 young Germans come over there, promise to invest and come back 1 year later, and it's all done and built. So yeah, that was the start of the NGO.
Was it easy to get accepted locally?
I think in the beginning, it was definitely unusual for them that not only the man speaks, but I think with us all being quite straightforward and challenging in terms of question, we have developed kind of a symbiotic relationship with our partners. So they also actively ask for our support or advice or challenging. And then if we visit, of course, schools, we typically get a big ceremony and celebration with many speeches. And we make sure that the speeches are also either held by one of our female members. And also if the male members hold the speech, that we make it quite clear how important it is for us to have equality. So it's a constant reminder. And I would say in our partners, it's quite established. We also have the first female colleague now. If we go more on the rural side, it's definitely something that is not seen that often. But that's why we're there, right? So,
did Roland Berger as a company support the project? And if so, how?
On several layers. We do have an annual donation that Roland Berger provides us with. So it's every year newly decided, but we are happy to get this constant support in form of course, funding. Second, they gave us the platform in terms of being able to speak in all hands, EMEA calls, APEC calls, worldwide calls, provide us also therefore not only with a platform, but also with many colleagues who actively A, want to contribute, or B, ask really challenging questions, which helps us, of course, to get better too. And at the end, having an NGO is a bit like having a small business. So having access to different skill sets and just being able to spar some ideas is always helpful. And lastly, is of course that we have the chance with the social fellowship to have Victoria be 3 months fully dedicated to our NGO, which is nothing that any of the other members who all work full time. Nobody is paid. 100% of the donations go to our recipients. Is not something that we could have done otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Now I switch to Victoria. Thank you very much, Lisa. Victoria, what do you do at Roland Berger?
I am a project manager in our health team with a focus on pharma. So what that means is that we help projects from new market entry drugs to products that have been on the market are losing market share, as well as products that are going out of patent. We help them stay relevant in the market, help them find their place. And so we try and say we're on the good side, helping medications get to the people who need them.
So you did a social fellowship at Roland Berger. What is a social fellowship?
So a social fellowship is a program offered by the company as part of the Be and Me program. So if you apply, you then and get accepted, you then get 3 months off from your regular project work to really focus on the project of your choosing. So your charity project that you're interested in. And with this 3 months that you get to focus on the project, the company also supports you with some of your salary, so 50% of your salary, so that you can still, pay the daily things like your rent, without having to worry about that while you focus on something good.
And to choose Big Girls Foundation as your social fellowship location and partner, why?
For me, it was sort of quite natural. So since high school, a bit like Lisa, I've been working in different charities. So I worked for one helping children in Africa get education. It's also a scholarship program during high school. Then in university, I worked for a charity that also helped young girls get education. So when I sort of heard about Big Girls Foundation through Lisa and the presentations she was talking about, it felt really sort of natural. And I liked the fact that it's not a massive charity. You really know 100% of the funds go to the girls who need it. And so that really interested me. And I told Lisa that I would be interested. And when the idea of the hygiene project came up, or the need for a hygiene project, Lisa actually reached out to me as well and asked me if it would be something I would be interested in based on my background.
Can you tell me a little bit more about the project itself, the hygiene project, to get a little bit more detail about it?
Sure. So the hygiene project, the reason it sort of came to be, or the concept behind it, was that, as Lisa mentioned, we have provided scholarships, which means we take over the financial burden to help young girls go to school. We are building infrastructure, so water, the water wells, desks, to also take away sort of this inconvenience burden of girls going to school. We've built toilets and sleeping halls for the girls as well. So that's also sort of another infrastructural sort of challenge that they had previously to go to school. But the one thing that was still a challenge to the girls, and the one thing that is actually normal for every female, is menstruation. And that is because the girls do not have access to education around what is normal when it comes to menstruation. They also don't speak about it openly. It's a very taboo topic. So the girls, if they have their periods, are scared to go to school in case they bleed through their school uniform. And this is often because they don't have access to the hygiene products they need, like, you know, menstrual pads. And so that we saw is a huge challenge, with the girls missing up to 4 days of school every month when they have their periods. And if you can imagine, you miss 4 days of school a month, you do miss a lot of your education. So we didn't want them falling behind and putting their scholarships in risk for something so natural. And so then we thought, well, what can we do to help this? And it, you know, came up with two parts. Obviously, helping provide the girls with sanitary products is very important if they can't afford them, because girls were turning to terrible means to try and get hold of these sanitary products, or using alternative methods, which are not actually very hygienic. So taking old rags or using parts of old mattresses to stop the blood flow, which is of course an infection risk. And then we also thought the whole stigma part is also a huge issue. So girls don't know what's normal, how long a period should be. They don't know how often it should come. They don't know that it's okay to talk about it. Everyone has it. Every female has it. So that was the education part, where we then spoke to them daily on different regions about what their life goals are, what they need to achieve that. Part of it obviously being education. If they want to be a neurosurgeon, you need to go to school and go to your math lessons, even if you have your period. And then what is their period, and also try to break that stigma by us and young women from the Young Jewels Foundation, which is the Nairobi-based menstrual health team that we worked with, who did the lessons in Swahili, working with them to kind of show, look, we're here in front of you today. I might have my period, but I could still play football. I could jump around. No one looks at me and sees me as diseased because I have my period. It's a very normal thing. So just helping them talk about this, because in Kenya, there's statistics that show less than 50% of girls are even comfortable speaking to their mothers about their periods. So you can imagine how scary it is for them then if suddenly one day they start bleeding and they don't know what's happening. And they also don't have anyone to ask, is it normal that it's not coming at the moment? Or is it normal that it's so long or so heavy?
Did you see or experience that the girls became more self-confident?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. So I think, you know, it was all very shy in the beginning. If you asked, you know, who started your period yet? Because we had girls ranging from quite young to already some girls in university who then later on could act as our sort of big sisters to the other girls in their area. it was very shy, very nervous until we put our hands up and said, oh, yeah, I have mine. All of that, speaking about it very openly. Then you could see how the girls, you know, opened up towards the topic, opened up towards the fact that it's normal, and were very confident to speak about it. And along with our collaborator, the Young Jewels Foundation, we could also, they had a motivational song, which we sang at the start of every lesson. We taught the girls to sing it. It's called I Know I Can. And this, the girls would sing at the start. We did some games with them and they would sing it on their way out of the training as well. So, you know, to remind themselves that they can, if they have a goal, they can achieve it. They just need to believe in themselves and make it happen.
Mm-hmm. What were the biggest challenges in that time?
So it's a very different working culture sometimes between charity organizations and consultants. So you have to adjust your speed a little bit, also understand what's possible. It was a brand new region. I'm South African by birth. My mother is South African. So I know the southern part of Africa, but I'd never been to Kenya before. So obviously getting to know the area, understanding cultural differences, how people work, that was obviously a big challenge. And making sure that we can get things achieved in the time I was there, but without obviously annoying anyone by being too much of a pushy consultant and trying to make things go really, really fast and understand what is possible and what is within budget as well. So we can achieve something big, but, you know, keep it possible within budget.
What did you do on days you were not involved in the project? Were there any days you were not involved in the project? So you got a little bit of leisure time.
There is, to be honest, there was always something to do. So if it wasn't on the hygiene project, there were other projects I was helping with, or I also was very happy to jump in and help the local colleagues when it came to their normal admin tasks. So once or twice a year, girls come, or the scholarship students come and write letters to their donors. And obviously these letters need to be checked for spelling mistakes and content. And it's one day where you have hundreds of kids writing letters and you have to correct the letters. So you feel a bit like a school teacher sitting at a desk with the students lining up. So I happily jumped in to help that. But on days like weekends when there really wasn't anything going on, I had the great opportunity to really explore the area there. And it's one of the most unbelievably beautiful places in the world. It's, I don't know how to describe it. It's nothing like you can ever see. If you've people who say they've been on a safari, it's not even comparable, because it's just open landscape. You're not driving into a national park. It's open landscape. And in this open landscape, you see zebras, giraffes, elephants, lions, if you're lucky, cheetahs, just the animals roaming free. And I was lucky to be there in a very beautiful time. So we'd had quite a bit of rain already. So everything was very green and lush. The animals were all very happy. So there's really nothing you can compare to how beautiful it is there. So really just exploring the local area is how I spent any free time.
Sounds great. As far as I understood, the open landscape and the free roaming animals can also be a problem, Lisa. In which way?
Yeah. Well, there are luckily very few, but still some animal attacks. Also elephants, which was actually news to me. I knew they're not to be come too close, but that it's on normal ways to school, for instance. But also we built the first well, and then we did not consider that elephants also are in desperate need of water and robbed the school of water. So we had to consider, for instance, ways of working around that with either, I think we had once a bee fence in discussions, but at the end had just a small water hole a bit further away. So that's definitely something to consider in your normal plans, which we had to learn the hard way. Yeah.
If I can add to that, something that also is a challenge for the school kids sometimes is if they have to travel from home to the school, it can be quite long distances. And to be at school on time with the school day to start, they often have to start walking from home at 5 a.m. And 5 a.m. is also the most active time for lions and hyenas. And so this could also be a challenge for kids to walk through these remote areas without any protection. And there have been historical stories of hyena attacks on kids. So that is also a big challenge for some kids when it comes to education.
What did you learn, Victoria, personally from this project?
I think it was a great opportunity. I mean, I know I grew up in a privileged household, raised in Switzerland. You know, I had everything I always needed. But I think it was really good to have a reminder again. I think personally how good my life is and how much opportunity I have to actually contribute to make other people's lives better. Because I have this privilege, that means I should share it. And I'm very happy to do that. You don't have a choice of where you're born, who you're born to, what family you're born into. And we can only really advance as a society if we try and break down these inequalities between us and try and get everyone on a more even footing. So I think that for me was a great reminder. And also just reminding that, you know, you can do lots of good in your free time.
So, Lisa, what was the most beautiful moment for you, or the moment that touched you the most?
I think two. The first one, when we invited 60 girls that we support into the Kimana Sanctuary, so a sanctuary by our partner, and meeting 60 girls at once kind of shows you, even if we have now roughly 200 students, active students, and over 300 that graduated, it shows you the size you already support, and then being so motivated, driven, they want to beat the boys' school next year for the A-level tests, and spending time was amazing. And then we had even the pleasure that elephants visited. So our video recorder was taken over by the girls, and they explored wildlife videography. That was the first one. And the second one is when we have our speeches and really emphasize that we focus on girls, you can really see how faces and eyes of not only the girls, but also their mothers light up, because it's not that often that it's purely a day where they're in the limelight and the spotlight. And that is quite touching. If you see how much that means for them and how much potential and energy is there, and giving them the stage that they deserve.
Amazing. Victoria, do you want to add something to this? Your personal special moment?
Yeah, I think for me, it was really with the menstrual health training days. So you have huge groups of girls. Sometimes we had 300 girls in one day, one place to get the education. And they all come in quite quiet and a bit, you know, nervous. They know we're going to talk about menstrual health. It's a very taboo topic in the area. So everyone's a little bit quiet. And throughout the day with, you know, motivational songs sort of about female power and they can achieve what they want to achieve, talking about their goals of what they want to be in life. And their goals are often they want to be a neurosurgeon or they want to be the president or, you know, really amazing life goals. Watching them sort of come out of their shells and at the end of the day be way more open, be way more ready to talk about their own personal health openly and know what they want to plan to go ahead with their dreams. So that for me was a really cool moment, just seeing this development in self-confidence from the start of one of our hygiene days towards the end.
A big thank you to Lisa and Victoria. If you want to learn more about the Big Girls Foundation, please follow the link in our show notes. We wish you a great week. Until the next episode of the Roland Berger People Insights podcast.